From KCUR Studios, I'm Sam Zeff. This is Statehouse Blend, Kansas. When the Kansas legislative session started in January, there was much talk about whether moderate Republicans and Democrats could work together, develop a coalition to move a progressive agenda, put LLCs back on the tax rolls, put more money in for schools, maybe even keep concealed carry from arriving on hospital and university campuses. As we get ready for what's sure to be a wild finish to this session, I wanted to know if this coalition really has come together, and if so, how is it working? We'll ask our two guests, who will introduce themselves now.
This is Senator Barbara Bollier.
From?
I am from Mission Hills, Kansas, and my district is 7 in the senatorial arena.
Excuse me, I'm Patrick Miller. I'm an assistant professor of political science at the University of Kansas.
You are exactly the two who I need in here to talk about this today. Barbara, I'm going to start with you. Early on, the moderates and Democrats pushed a bill to restore teacher tenure, which is really due process for public school teachers, to the House. And many thought, well, there it is. There's the coalition. The legislation stalled when it hit the Senate. It's in the Ways and Means now committee, which means it could come back. Do you think that there was a coalition that had formed between moderate Republicans and Democrats that made it look like there was going to be this progressive agenda that was going to just spread like wildfire through the state house?
Sam, to me, things progressed exactly as I would have predicted, in that, yes, on the House side, there is a huge majority if you put moderates and Democrats together. And that's what I anticipated would happen, and they would vote things through. While on the Senate side, that is not the case. It still is a significant number when you put moderates and Democrats together, but it's not a majority. Nobody has a majority. And so, yes, people are working together, depending on the issue, especially if you're looking at a veto override proof, which is absolutely what we need in Kansas these days. There aren't enough numbers.
But you would say that there is more working together across all kinds of ideological lines this session than you've seen in the past couple?
Absolutely. And I like your statement, across ideological lines, because I'm finding myself working more with people who in the past would never work with me, who would lean more conservative, that at least people are talking now. And I think that's true on the House side as well. That's what I hear from my colleagues on that side, that the leadership we have is now allowing conversation to take place, bills to move forward, et cetera. So there's more opportunity for discussion. So to say that there is a coalition that's going to move a specific agenda forward, yes and no. People try, but I think you're going to see a significant change to that idea when we get to school funding. And that is not going to be the coalition. That isn't how it's going to play out when we get to that issue.
And we're going to talk about that, but I want to bring Patrick Miller in here. You crunch numbers for a living over there at the University of Kansas, and we've had the pleasure of having you on our air on election night, on primary election night. And I'm wondering, as you saw the election wrap up, did you see the hints of a coalition forming just from the election results back in November?
I mean, I guess that for me, the place to start is even the word coalition, because it carries a lot of implications that maybe are there sometimes and maybe aren't. And I think that, you know, as the senator said, and listening to journalists and from legislators that I talk to, there certainly does seem to be a different mood in Topeka. People having conversations, people's feeling about where the legislature may be going changing. But I think that if we go back to the election, there were a lot of people who felt that because moderates and Democrats had made gains, there was all of a sudden going to be this, you know, kumbaya, feel good, everyone's on the same page block of people who are going to change legislation in Kansas. And I mean, that's not necessarily the case. I mean, moderates are a very diverse group. And sometimes it's not even a very useful term. Some moderates are relatively left of center. Some are somewhere in the middle. some moderate Republicans are generally quite conservative but might veer more to the center on education or tax issues, particularly as it relates to the governor's policy. So not even all moderates agree with each other, and where they come down on the on issues is going to vary all the time. And certainly you have a situation for moderates where even though on many issues they may agree politically with Democrats, or many of them do, there is that pressure at the same time. You know, you're still caucusing with the Republican Party, which has a lot of conservatives in it. And there's that pressure, you know, when can you expend political capital to defect from where conservatives are, vote with Democrats, and when do you need to, no one take this the wrong way, toe the party line on a vote because there's pressure coming from the speaker or whomever. So there are a lot of different pressures at place here on a legislator who, you know, is thinking about how they're going to vote. So for those of us from the outside who are like, rah-rah coalition, something big is going to happen, there'll be a big change, I think we need to appreciate just the diversity there is politically among moderates especially, and all the different pressures there are on them to, you know, think about different constituencies and political players in supporting certain legislation.
So if it's not a coalition, then how would you describe it, Patrick?
I mean, again, it feels like it often varies. I mean, I think previously to this session, it often looked like a group of people who were often united by knowing what they were against, which was against a lot of the things the governor was proposing, some of the more controversial legislation. You know, certainly moderates, Democrats have more power now. It may be more difficult to find what you're for and advance an agenda oftentimes, whereas there might be a lot more solidarity in knowing that you don't want to continue down the road that you've been on. And I'm sure there are conversations that go on between legislators, and maybe there's some degree of strategy, but it's not like moderates and Democrats are getting together in some kind of formal caucus and having a game plan about where they are typically and where that's going to go. So, you know, you look at some things like Medicaid expansion or the LLC issue, and certainly a lot of solidarity there between moderates and Democrats, or the vote to bring up the gun debate again. And you saw a lot more division there. Many moderates siding with the conservatives on that, some with the Democrats. So I think the dynamic varies from issue to issue, really. I mean, so just for me, it's hard to call it a coalition because that implies there's a lot of structure and coordination.
Barbara?
Well, this brings back memories from now 8 years ago when there was a coalition specifically, and it was a very structured, i.e., planned out, conscious effort to get the 1 cent sales tax moved through way back in the recession to save the state at that time. You know, Don Heineman, who's now the representative who is the majority leader on the House side, he was part of that, leading it and writing a specific plan, a tax plan and budget plan then. To say that we have a true coalition like that right now would not be the case. I mean, people work together on issues. So, but to say that there's people, you know, a conscious, we're going to form a coalition of these two groups and we're going to join together and fight together. Coalitions form around every topic. So the fact that they are on more of an agenda that those groups agree with is true. And I think people who voted knew that. That those were common themes that they wanted change. They wanted differences in gun laws. They wanted Medicaid expansion. They wanted a change in tax policy. And moderates and Democrats both ran on that as their platform. So, of course, they're working in concert. But to say that, like, we don't caucus together exactly. And so it makes it, until we're doing that specifically, I wouldn't call it a coalition.
So you've come together. There is certainly more talking as we've talked about, but you've still yet to pass legislation that solves some of these enormous problems that you just talked about: taxes, budget, school finance. And it's clear from what's happened previously, governor vetoes, don't have override votes, that to fix something, because you've got to come up with a budget. That's the one thing you have to do. Well, you also have to do school finance, or else the Supreme Court's going to shut down public education. When you come back on May 1st, will there have to be more compromise and more talking across ideological lines to solve this? Because I think a lot of people thought that, you know, you were going to there was going to be a lot of working together. A lot of these big things were going to be solved before you left for this break. So while there won't be a coalition, aren't you guys going to have to, you know, buckle down and get your work done and work across lines?
Well, the answer is it is. In that sense, the word coalition, I agree, Patrick, that it's just not the right word. There are people working together to get something passed. So we are way closer to the override numbers than we are to what the governor wants with only Republican votes to pass what it is that he wants. So I think that's out the window, and what we have to do is work on the very few numbers of people that it's going to take to get to the override numbers. And what I thought about earlier is this notion of having Jake LaTourneur out.
LaTourneur, the state senator from Pittsburgh.
State senator who's now our treasurer, appointed treasurer. And so as he leaves, the opportunity, he had a chairmanship. So it's possible, and this would be typical in a legislature, to utilize that opportunity for power to be a chair of a committee to say, yes, we'll make you chair, but we need your vote on X and Y, and that agreement to be made. Now, whether that's happening or not, I don't know. I have my suspicions, and I think that those kinds of things will absolutely go on. But that is what always goes on at end of session. This just presents a rather unique opportunity. But bargains start being struck. If you'll give me a vote on guns, I'll give you a vote on school funding or whatever. That's how things happen at the end. So that's what you're going to see happening.
So as you head back, let's cover the big issues. Let's start with school finance. There is a bill. It hasn't been passed out of committee, but it seems to be the working document. This would provide $750 million new dollars over 5 years to public education, essentially go back to the old formula with some differences. First, I want to hear you talk about whether or not you think $750 million over 5 years is going to satisfy the Kansas Supreme Court. Barbara Boyer.
Great question. Crystal ball, I hath not. I don't know. I don't think they have a specific number in mind. And I will tell you that I think the Senate is going to have I don't know how significantly different, but definitely a different position on school funding and how that will look, and then it will go to conference bargaining-wise to figure out how we do that. But my take from at least the Republican caucus is that we don't want the exact same formula and or even real close to it. So I can't tell you what the changes will be. I'm on the committee. We haven't even really had enough meetings yet. But I anticipate that people are working over the break. Surely Senator Jim Denning, who's the chairman, is working on this and figuring out where he wants to lead us in that place. The $750 million, that's just going to have to, we'll wait and see. I don't know that it takes that much. It takes more. I don't know if the court is even going to look just at the numbers, but the way the money is spent may be more of an issue based on what I read from their report when they ruled. So we'll see. But I don't think it's going to be just as smooth as the House passes this. It runs over to the Senate, we pass it, and it's done. I do not anticipate that.
Senator Boyer is making a little bit of news here, and so I want to just explore that for a second. Senator Denning from Overland Park, friend of State House Blend, by the way. So is he working on his own school funding formula at this point that you think is going to be introduced in your committee and talked about?
I don't think he's working on a formula, but I think what he's doing is examining what the House has put together and saying, what do we think needs to be different? Does that make sense? Because that's going to be, I think, our working document. And then what does the Senate think they agree with and what is something that they want to change? And that could be from how we calculate at-risk students to do we have more in the base for funding or do we have fewer weightings or more weightings or different weightings or
you're talking about variations on the funding formula that the previous funding formula to the block grants, essentially kind of what came out of the House committee. So you're not talking, am I hearing you say they're talking about a major change, apples and oranges, or that you've got some other ideas of how to make that formula work?
Well, to answer that, every state has a funding formula, essentially, except Hawaii does it. They only have one school district, so it's kind of done differently. But so we all do. So everything's a variation on a theme of a formula. To me, looking at how many weightings there are would be an area that I think will be discussed because we've talked about that in committee. We've gone through all of the weightings, and I can see people's faces and how they react to that. I think people like Senator Molly Baumgartner, who's the chairman of the Education Committee, has some very specific ideas that she would like to see considered, such as do we have different amounts of money that go to primary or elementary ed versus middle school versus high school, because some states divvy their money out that way. So she would like to see a change in how we count, do a student enrollment count, and we've explored some of that. It may be the same as what the House put a position of having two counts a year. Maybe that same, but that's a change from where we were before. I can't anticipate because it's not like we've all been working together all session, not even all session, but during the break. But I certainly myself have had conversations with people about, you know, what is it that you think meets the needs of students in today's world, which whether it is, you know, for whatever part of the state you're in, if you're poor, wherever, it should be the same. If you're at risk for having a reading disability, it shouldn't be different what you need to be able to read better. So those things should be consistent.
Patrick, I'm wondering, given the campaigns that many ran on education, putting more money into education. Are you surprised that they didn't get this done before the break?
No, I mean, this is...
I must be the only one here who thinks who is optimistic about all of this.
I mean, if I have to think of like all the political problems, I may express a political opinion here. All the political problems that Kansas has right now. You know, what's that game where you have like the mallet and you're trying to hit the gophers?
Whack-a-mole.
Like,
that's the whack-a-mole, right?
It's like which mole do you want to hit first? But then half the moles are the size of tractor trailers, seemingly. the expectation that you're going to have massive overnight change on incredibly challenging budgetary and policy problems in a short period of time by a citizen legislature, that's pretty unreasonable. So I don't think that the slowness, it may appear from the outside, should surprise anyone. Having a drawn-out session shouldn't surprise anyone. This is why some states have professional year-round legislatures, quite frankly.
Yes.
But, you know, ultimately, we'll have to have fixes on these things. Some fixes may be Band-Aid. Some fixes may be real fixes. And there'll be opportunities, you know, as the Senator just pointed out, on an issue like education. This is an opportunity for a lot of people in the legislature to revisit their particular angles of the education debate that they want to bring up and talk about. So it's a very complex process, especially with so many fingers in the pot of a very complicated process.
Mm. Let's talk about a couple of more taxes. do you think that we're going to close the LLC exemption?
Yes.
Are we going to add a third tax bracket? Are you
yes.
going to be able to muster up enough votes to get that past a Brownback veto?
I think that we'll eliminate the retroactivity portion and bring it back basically as the bill was, with three brackets and all the other little pieces, and I think it'll pass. And I think it will be the veto-proof part, and that's my prediction, and then it's time to move forward.
Looked like Senator Denning, who is the majority leader in the Senate, that it was a retroactivity that that really prevented him from supporting the bill. Explain that, what the retroactivity part of it was.
It meant that we would have a tax, income tax increase starting 2017 year, which is now, and you wouldn't be paying, normally you wouldn't be paying those taxes until 2018, right. But and you're supposed to already have your rate in place, but we would go back. So people who, his issue was for people who had deductions automatically taken out of their paychecks that were already way behind, and that isn't the right thing to do, and it would put too much money and pressure at the end point. So not all of us agreed, but let's get to a place where we get some money into this budget. And I think there are enough votes there. And I think, again, with the change with LaTurner, maybe we'll see a change, maybe not. But not that the LaTurner vote would change, but maybe there will be some finagling with some power issues.
Is it too early, Patrick Miller, to be looking forward to 2018 and saying, what are these guys now doing that could have an effect on those legislative races in 2018?
Never. But I also want to say is, I mean, as a political scientist, I always start from the perspective of, well, what's the context of this? And it starts from the top down. I mean, and the top is the presidential situation. I mean, that often drives midterms for one party or another. Typically, the party of a president loses seats in midterms, not just federally, but at the state level. So that may be a challenge for many Republicans, whether you're a moderate or a conservative, depending upon the kind of district or state you're running in. If we look here at Kansas, you know, it's not like voters become a blank slate about the last 8 years when they're replacing a chief executive, whether it's a governor or a president. And how they feel about the Brownback years could shape the mood they're in, their willingness to vote for a Democrat or a Republican of some flavor in the gubernatorial race. So, you know, if you're a Republican, you're looking at a midterm where you not only have Trump at the top, but also some negativity around Brownback that may cause you some challenges. And you can only do so much to affect that around the edges. You know, you try to do what you can to ride a wave if a wave is building. And this is why we're paying so much attention now to special elections for state legislatures and Congress to see if we see trends starting to build. You know, but I think if at least where we sit today, I mean, the election is a year and a half off. We don't even know who's running for state legislative seats, let alone Congress. You know, if you're a Republican, you should probably be on yellow alert about what's happening. You know, the clacks, you know, the Starship Enterprise red alert has not started quite yet. But, you know, putting the tea leaves together, you might want to start positioning yourself as well as you can. And if you're a Democrat, you might be a little eager and be looking for opportunities given where the winds are blowing. But that's a long way off.
Tea leaves and Star Trek, all in the same thought. I like that. I want to get to Barbara. I can tell I've interviewed you enough that there's something you want to jump in there and say. But I do have one question you mentioned about we don't know who the candidates are right for legislature, but there are some conservatives who are making some noise about running again. Jeff Melcher from Leawood, Greg Smith from Overland Park, both ousted in the previous election. There is chatter that they're interested in running either for probably a House seat. Do you think that that conservatives should be jumping back into the pool in 2018, given what you just said?
I mean, primaries are so, I mean, it's often a lot easier to handicap and project out trends in a general election because you have a lot of good data about what the mood is between Democrats and Republicans. If you look inside of a party primary, whether it's Republican or Democratic, that's often a very hard thing to project. I mean, certainly we look at the last election and moderate Republicans, you know, wherever they fall on the spectrum actually, did pretty well, even though their party is increasingly becoming quite conservative. So despite the long-term trend, they had an election with a lot of success. 2018 may well turn out, if we look at the mood of just the Republican electorate in Kansas, to be one that continues to be good for moderates. Or if the conservative bloc is, you know, they're angry or motivated about whatever, you know, they may be interested in fielding some candidates as well and trying to turn out their base. So it's a very hard thing to actually project out and handicap.
Barbara, jump on in here and tell me what you wanted to say.
Well, I want to go back to is it too early to even be talking about this? And I will tell you, absolutely not, because what is coming is already influencing voting, very much so, at least on the Senate side. So we have Karen Tyson, who may be running for a congressional seat. We had Jake LaTurner, who might have been running and is now up in the treasurer's office. We have Susan Weigel, who says she may run for governor or not. And most of us have seen their voting being very much influenced by the possibility that they might be moving on for a higher elected office. And for me, I find that very frustrating. Be in the moment. Be here for the people now. Worry about that later. But obviously, politics, that isn't true. So maybe to the general public, it doesn't seem to be on their agenda. But I guarantee you in the legislature, it is front and center and is affecting votes.
And we'll leave it there. Patrick Miller from the University of Kansas, great to have you on State House Blend, and we will have you back.
Thank you.
Senator Barbara Boyer from Mission Hills, always a pleasure to have you,
thank you,
at this table.
Great to be here.
State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp and Amy Jeffries today. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you do your podcast business. We're also on KCUR.org/StateHouseBlend. If you've got that NPR One app, search for us in Explore and click subscribe. You can follow me on the Twitter. I'm at Sam Zeff. And my co-host Brian Ellison over there at State House Blend, Missouri, is at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you around the radio.